This is episode 175. I'm Tommy Serafinski, and this is Conservation and Science Podcast, where we take a deep dive into topics of ecology, conservation, and human-wildlife interactions. I always strive to bring you diverse perspectives on every environmental story, and today we are going to talk about Finnish Sotka project. Sotka is a large-scale habitat restoration, and that is achieved by wetlands rehabilitation, restorations of mires and catchments, and control of non-native predators like American mink and raccoon dog. Sotka is also concerned with building a network of resting areas for waterfowl. Our guests today are Veli-Matti Pekkarinen, who is the waterfowl habitat specialist at the Finnish Hunters Association, and Heikki Helle, who is the wetland specialist at BirdLife Finland. And as you notice, these are two gentlemen from two different organizations. One is the hunting organization, and another one is, non-consumptive ecological conservation organizations. And I always like when hunters and non-hunters work together hand in hand for the benefit of nature and for the benefit of habitat, like in this case. And before I let you enjoy this episode, I would like to give a big shout out to Pori Green and NARGC. Without their support, this episode simply wouldn't be possible. And now, without any further delay, enjoy the show. Guys, welcome to the show. It is really a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. Thrilled to be here.
Thank you. It's an honor.
It's an honor for me, and I'm really thankful that you found some time for this conversation. Folks, we're going to talk about Sotka project and situation of the waterfowl. But maybe before we start, I would like you to introduce yourselves for the listeners, because I think you bringing like a very unique background into one podcast.
Okay, thank you. I will start. My name is Veli-Matti Pekkarinen. I work for Finnish Hunters Association in Sotka project, where we are making a network for peaceful autumn time areas for waterfowl. And we are running a project together with the Finnish Hunters Association and BirdLife Finland. And therefore, my colleague is next.
Yeah, we come in too. I'm Heikki Helle, and I work for BirdLife Finland as a wetland specialist. In our project, Veli-Matti is the Hunters Association's guy, and I'm the BirdLife guy. And we come hand in hand, and well, I have a long history in bird watching. I have been watching birds since I was this tall, maybe, and since then, been studying biology. And finally, at this stage of my life, I'm working for the only proper place for me to work in, the BirdLife Finland. And it's a very, very nice thing to be part of this project. It's the first time that these two organizations, BirdLife Finland and the Hunters Association, are working together in a project.
And this is something I my mission with this podcast, to get environmental groups and environmental organizations and hunting groups to work together, because there's like so much synergy. And unfortunately, what I see quite often that these groups are at odds rather than working together. And I would really should start with the question, what is Sotka project, and ask you to say something about it. But I'm going to start with, like, how did that happen, that these two organizations came together? How did that happen? Like, who approached who, or did it happen organically that you folks, hunters and, you know, bird watchers and environmentalists are working together?
Well, for the start, I have to say that there's been cooperation even before when we started summer 2020. And the Finnish Hunters Association and BirdLife Finland has been working together, for example, in making media work with comes together with the opening season of waterfowling. And therefore, there's been working together years before we started this project. Maybe the thing over here is that we don't have that much of we are not opposite sides in Finland. We have a common, of course, we have different angles to things, and of course we have different perspective to bird questions. But for example, in waterfowling, we have a perfect similar way that we work together, can work together for the waterfowl. And since Finland is an important area for bird production, it is vital that in a small country with many, many, many lakes, we combine our effort and work for the waterfowl.
And what comes to the Sotka project itself, we are only a small part of a much larger project. And of course, there are parts in the bigger project. There are some for the wildlife agency and parks and forests working on the state-owned land. And so there's a little piece for everyone working in the sector. And also we were honored that we were given this small project of ours to run. And since we're talking about voluntary things to work with, I suppose it was very natural only to ask for the kind of third sector associations to do that work.
So you had like a good relation between yourselves to begin with. That's good to hear. Folks, so let's talk about Sotka project itself. It is part, like you mentioned, is part of the bigger project called HELMI, I believe, which is like a habitats program. So can you just briefly, like a top contour, explain what the HELMI project is, and then dive a little bit deeper into Sotka, what part of that project Sotka is, what are the aims, what are the goals, I suppose?
The HELMI project as large, it's about conserving biodiversity, the original biodiversity in Finland. And of course, it's not only about conserving, but also a whole lot about restoration. And it's a large project that deals with all the different habitat types that we have in Finland. It has to do with forests. It has to do with swamps and peatlands and all the traditional cultural habitats. And one part of that project is then to do with the bird wetlands. And then that is divided into smaller parts, and some of those parts are then a small project, as the Sotka project that is governed by the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry. So it's a huge project, the HELMI program itself, and then only a small part of it has to do with bird wetlands. And a part of that sub-project is then the Sotka project, and we are a small part of that. So actually, if we think about the last 4 or 5 years, how much is going on concerning biodiversity in Finland, like the investments are huge. We have never seen such investments in history. And actually, what comes to the waterfowl, maybe even for too long, we've been relying on always on new birds coming in. They are migrants. In the springtime, they arrive. And whatever we do in Finland, they will always arrive in the springtime. There will be plenty of them to hunt in the autumn. And if they migrate away, there will be new birds coming in from the east. So we have a long history what comes to the forest grouse. We monitor the forest grouse populations very, very meticulously. And then we adjust the hunting pressure according to the population levels. But none of that has been applied to waterfowl. And we're only like during this, I would say that during these last four or five years, now that the, that all of this work is going on. We are only now realizing that we should have the same kind of system of adjusting the hunting also with the waterfowl. So we're really on addressing some questions in Finland that have been never addressed before.
And we could say that in the last few years, we have just started talking about waterfowl seriously in a matter of hunting perspective and matter of habitats. And I have to say that we don't have a good honor in taking care of our natural waters from bird perspective, and we have done things in past 100 years that affect till here, and we are losing all the time our good bird habitats, waterfowl habitats, because of draining work we have done. And therefore, this is about the last time we make major actions for taking care of the habitats and taking care of our freshwaters, fishery, and so on. And therefore, we could say that there's a crush of different kind of activities and programs and projects and finances according to freshwaters and, for example, waterfowl.
And so who initiated? Was it a governmental project? Did government initiate the project?
Yes. The Helmi program is drawn to year 2030. And it's put together with ministries of environment and forestry and agriculture. And our project is a part of that, run by the Ministry of Farming and Forestry. But they all belong in the same big basket. So therefore, we are now under a project by agriculture and forestry ministry.
And what comes to that, it's in the past we haven't had such joint efforts of the two ministries. Like the Ministry of Environment has been working here, and then the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry somewhere over here. And we really haven't seen this kind of joining forces in the history. So even in that sense, that this is very, very new to Finland, have the two ministries working together.
Wow, this is great to hear. So, folks, we roughly know what the Sotka project is. Finland has the majority of European waterfowl. Is that right?
Yes, it is that we are on the great flyway, and since we are our nature open, has been open for waterfowl that much, it's because we have some 108,000 lakes, for example, and Finland is not too crowded when you go the more east or to more north. There's a lot of peace around there, and therefore we have great opportunities for the waterfowl to nest over here. And therefore we can say that we have a great responsibility of taking care of this child room of European waterfowl. Of course, we are living next to Russia, and there's great openings on beside that eastern border, but there's not too much of birdwise action at the moment we can do on that side of the border.
Yeah, Finland is an important production, let's say production country, when it comes to, many of the species, we have plenty of wheatgen, for instance, in Finland, and it's most likely a species that, for instance, in Ireland, you're very interested about what happens with the wheatgen, how well they reproduce in Finland. And Finland, even more important for the pintail or the golden eye. Finland is really, really important what comes to the nesting success of those species.
So let's talk about waterfall now. I heard some really worrying numbers. I heard something about pair index, 7 species all are down. Pollchart 96% down. Some other monitoring, 16 species, only 3 increase. Mallard down 22%. Some really, you know, I'm not sure if I'm getting these numbers right. But can you just lay it out? What is the situation of waterfowl? Is it really this bad? And then maybe what are the reasons for it?
Well, overall, the two main reasons for the downhill of waterfowl in Finland is that we are losing the habitats. And the other one is that we have two massive invasive predators, American mink and raccoon dog. And when we are losing bird sites, we can see a concentration of birds to certain areas that are still suitable for the bird. And at those areas, both mink and raccoon dogs are doing a horrible work, killing the hatching birds, killing ducklings, and even the presence of, for example, mink disturbs birds, and they leave the nesting areas. And those are the the two main reasons for the downhill of the waterfowl.
Well, you mentioned losing the habitat, and it's kind of there's two parts in losing the habitat. So we have, it was mentioned already earlier that we have lost thousands of wetlands in Finland. Like we have a long, unfortunately, we have a long history in draining our wetlands. We've been doing that for more than 100 years. We have lost thousands of wetlands. They have been drained for forestry, agriculture, collecting the peat for energy. It really doesn't matter what's the reason for draining the lands, but we have lost a whole lot of breeding habitat for the waterfowl. And another thing is what happens with the water, the wetlands nowadays, and that also has to do with the drainage. The quality of the waters is going down. The drained areas, there's a whole lot of nutrients and other kind of matter coming from the drained areas, and since that collects in the wetlands and waterfowl areas, that diminishes the quality of those areas, so that there's no, well, they are shallow lakes, they tend to grow over. Since there's lots of nutrients, there's no room for the waterfowl to swim around anymore, and the quality of the water is also going down. We're only now realizing how much there is wrong with the quality of the waters. Like during the last 2 years, there have been some published research work about the brownification of the waters, which means that there is soluble organic matter in the water, which makes the water color turn darker. And that leads to there being less living things under the water. And that, of course, means that there's less things for the waterfowl to eat. So it's not only about drying the wetlands, but it's also to do with the quality of the wetlands that we have left. So it really is a huge problem, and it all comes down to the dark history with drainage that we have in Finland.
Is there any, because I presume that also avian influenza and climate change are surely not without impact on waterfowl as well. Are these big items of concern at the moment?
Well, of course, the avian influenza always have new effects each year it occurs. But like last season, we were lucky for the doubling ducks, for example. There were not too many of dead birds, but we lost the tons of smaller gulls, for example, that sometimes are crucial for some species. And we never know. We don't know what the coming year will bring and what kind of effect the disease will make And of course, the climate change is a threat more than a good thing. And the more north you go, the more it will affect for the habitats and nature. So for example, we could say that when our winters change, we don't have so much of snow coverage, for example. It's troublesome time, for example, these fellows over here, our natural rabbits are endangered because they change their color for the winter time, and the predators are really eating them up since lack of snow, for example, and both the winters are changing, but of course the spring is changing. It's becoming faster and faster, and that affects our homeland birds. They maybe start their nesting a little too early, and it might of course affect the waterfall. They start their nesting too early, and they become the victims of what we call a second winter, when we have a long spring, and when the ducklings need, for example, warmth and insects, we don't have each. But on the other side, the autumns are maybe coming longer. The non-frost time is longer, and therefore there's a chance for the waterfall to stay longer at the staging areas. So there are benefits, but too bad the dark side is stronger this time.
And what comes with the climate change, it also has to do with the nutrient loads in the water. If we have more rainfall during the winters, it means that more nutrients will flow to the wetlands, which I mentioned before. It's not good if we get even more nutrients in the wetlands. If we have like old, let's say, so-called good old time winters, like six months of snow cover, nothing will happen under the snow cover. The nutrients will stay there, but the more rainfall we get during the winter months, the more nutrients we have flowing into the water from the drained areas. Yeah, we have, at least from the black grouse and some passerine birds, we have some evidence that since the springs are getting earlier, the birds start their nesting earlier, but it means kind of a mismatch, so that they will nest too early, so that when the chicks need their food, there isn't any food available yet because it's only the beginning of the summer. Don't have any evidence from the waterfowl, but why wouldn't, if it happens with some other birds, why wouldn't it be just the same with the waterfowl? You mentioned the mallard before, and yes, during the last 10 years, even the mallard population has gone down that a bit more than 20%. And for long, we thought that since the winter, springs are getting milder and earlier, and the mallards can nest even earlier. And we thought that the mallard populations are doing fine. The springs are getting earlier. This must be a good thing. But now, because that was the trend in the 1990s and the beginning of the 2000s, the mallard population was slowly increasing. But now during the last 10 years, we've noticed that maybe it wasn't such a good thing that the springs are getting earlier and earlier, because it didn't help the mallard population.
So this is kind of like a not good situation, which unfortunately is a theme across the world when it comes to nature. So let's switch gears now and let's talk about what Sotka project, what you're doing to, you know, help the situation, help the waterfall, help the habitat. What are the main activities, and do you have any set goals of the project?
Our project with me and Heikki that we share we are collecting a network of staging areas for the waterfall. So we are looking for a free will network to cover Finland, that the bird could have more disturbance free areas where they could eat, get fat, finish their suit before they move from Finland. And the reason why we need these areas is that we open our waterfalling season at the 20th of August. And it's still a big event. And since we have less and less areas where we have amounts of waterfall, of course, the waterfalling focuses in areas. And which means that then when we have a strong and constant disturbance for the major staging areas, it means that the gathered flocks start their move, their migration weeks earlier than it's meant to be or biologically necessary. So they react for the hunting act and leave Finland too early. And that means that we are sending your way birds, young birds that are not grown enough. We are sending your way birds that they haven't finished their suit yet. For example, we are sending hens out that their suit is not ready. And so it's probable that we lose birds on the way to the wintering areas. And in both in these old and new bird groups, none of the birds have had time to collect fat inside the body. And which means if they reach the wintering areas, the living can be really tough over there. And the idea is the longer we keep our Finnish birds inside Finland, the more ready they are ready to move. And the better shape they move to wintering areas, the better shape and condition they are moving back at springtime. And therefore, we could actually each fall, we are kind of building the next spring production already. And therefore, we need the voluntary areas where each hunting area should point a place, a good habitat where birds could eat their natural food that is put out from hunting free willingly. So they could have their domestic birds close to their natural areas, and you could do the hunting around these staging areas, but birds always know that there's a peaceful place to fly over and wait for the ceasefire. And then from there, fly over for the feeding areas and always come back to safe areas. And the idea is to work together with the hunters and the landowners that they do it free willingly. This is nothing like that we are demanding certain areas or certain lakes or lake sites or wetlands that people, you need to turn it to the staging areas. But it means that people need to realize that it's the basis of the sustainable hunting that we keep our birds in Finland as long as possible. And that's the really sustainable hunting. And it's very cost effective. It doesn't cost you anything to put aside good habitats. And that actually is bringing you maybe a longer season in the future and better birds.
And what's the response from hunters and landowners to this idea to, you know, effectively limit hunting areas?
We are both hunters, and I have to say that this is a new thing that we are bringing in Finland. This we could say that this is a new age gamekeeping. This is not ordered strict protection, but this is kind of a self-defense in a way that we could say that as hunters we are proactive for the sake of the game. And as Heikki said earlier, the birds are not that numerous that they used to be. We can see the weakening already. And there are some practices in Finland, for example, that maybe weakens it and gathers birds too early to the flocks. But this is a very cost-effective way, and we have to be salesmen on this. And that's why it's so good that we are working hand-to-hand, bird people and hunting people, telling the same strong story that how we should do it better.
And the feedback that we get when we go, well, our work is to go around Finland, tell about this new method of waterfowl management or new game management practice what comes to waterfowling. We've been disappointed about getting no negative feedback. We only get positive feedback. So that's been kind of a disappointment, because when we were starting this project, of course, the thing that we were preparing for was how to respond to all the negative feedback that we get. There's no use doing that work since we haven't had to respond to the negative feedback. The Finnish hunters, waterfowlers, they really have noticed the situation themselves. And when we go around the hunting clubs and whatever, meeting the local waterfowlers around Finland, they have noticed, and they are saying that finally something is being done, because I see this in my own waterfowling areas. There is no more birds left. It's about time in the whole of Finland that we do something. So it really worries the common waterfowler in Finland, because they can see these old timers that have been hunting for the last 30, 40, 50 years. They can see it with their own eyes, what's happening with the Finnish waterfowl populations.
So we heard you said about the staging areas and kind of stopping, ceasing hunting to not push birds away so they not migrate too early. Are you also doing any work on the habitat restoration?
That's the Sotka work good side that we kind of, we are kind, the Sotka project is kind of a fork, that we have different kind of pins, and our pin is for the staging areas, and the other pin, that's the project that is led by the Finnish Game Agency, is making the wetlands, and therefore we could say that the Sotka project is a multifunctional project as a Swiss knife, and our job is not to build new sites, but of course we spread the word for the importance of the quality waters, and we are actually doing a cooperation with many different in many different ways and many different organizations. When the other organizations are developing their practices and their trainings for more sustainable drainage, for example, for more sustainable land use, for example, and so on. So it is the Finnish game agency that is digging and blocking new water sites.
And that has to do with creating new wetlands. Of course, there is, then if we talk about the bigger Helmi, it's actually good thing to mention that the Helmi project or Helmi program that we were discussing earlier Helmi is actually Pearl in English. So it's the Pearl program that maybe makes it more understandable for the English speaking listeners. So it's about preserving the pearls of Finnish nature. And in this SOTKA project is kind of the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry part of the Pearl program, what comes to the waterfowl areas. But then there is a sub-project of the Pearl program that has to do with existing waterfowl areas. So it's the regional environmental offices and Parks and Wildlife Finland that are working. They are restoring those. It's the best 200 waterfowl areas in Finland that are restored during this 10-year Pearl program. So it's not only about what we do in the SOTKA project, but also some huge efforts under the Pearl program. So creating new habitats and restoring the existing ones.
You mentioned also threat from predators, from invasive species, raccoon, dog, and mink. Is that also part? Which part of it? Is it part of the bigger Helmi, the Pearl project, or is it all part of the SOTKA project as well to kind of mitigate those risks?
At the moment, both. So both the Helmi program, the Pearl program, they have the old practices and they focus the hunting or the alien predator hunting for the most important habitats. And in SOTKA project, there's a smaller scale operation where we work together with landowners and actually with summer cottage people, the people who spend their holidays during the summer times living by the watersides. They often own the cottage by the lake or river, and it's often that at those areas where we have density of cottages is high by open water, it's often that the raccoon, dog, and mink are living at the same spot, because often the same people are kind of side feeding or purposely feeding those little nice furry animals. And in SOTKA project, we have this one more pin doing the work, voluntary work with summer cottage people and offering them traps to use. So for example, we could say that when summer cottage people informs the local authority that we have a mink problem or raccoon dog problem over here, the project delivers there a mink trap, instant killing mink trap or raccoon dog living catching trap, and all the summer cottage people need to do is set it, give a permission to be set over there, and call the local hunters that it's full. There's some animal over there. So it's very interesting practice, and it's getting now to be put in practice in all over Finland. First 2 years there was a test area, but the results were so great that program is now giving away those traps to all around Finland. And this program is run by the Finnish Hunters Association as well.
And actually, it's only during the recent years that we've come to realize how bad these invasive predators are for the Finnish nature. If we go back 10 years, you couldn't say that the public opinion would be against the invasive predators. But now during the latest years, even the public opinion has turned against the invasive predators. Just a couple of years ago, there was plenty of the nature conservation organizations they didn't see the invasive predators as any kind of risk to the Finnish nature. And it was, we had kind of an, it was kind of opposite sides, but in the latest years we have really joined our forces, and now even all the nature conservation associations understand that it is crucial to handle this problem also, that any time that we create new wetlands or if we restore existing wetlands, it's always crucial to somehow address the issue with the invasive predators also. But that it really has happened only during the, say, 5 to 10 years, the change in the public opinion.
Did that change happen organically, or were there any educational work put out to you know, kind of like a push that change?
Of course, the whole discussion what comes to alien invasive species, that whole discussion has been building up in the last decade or so. So it must be part of a bigger picture or change of some kind of, well, times are changing and people are finally realizing the how harmful the alien invasive species are for the original Finnish nature. And of course, what comes to the raccoon dog, for instance, we actually didn't have that much research work about the harmful effects of the raccoon dog, and that body of literature has been building up only in the latest years. So now, at the moment, we understand a whole lot more about how harmful, for instance, the raccoon dog is for the waterfowl.
Yes, for sure, and it's a good to hear that there is like a societal backing, because again, that's one of the things I talk quite often here, where in Ireland or in the UK, sometimes that understanding is missing. And Velimatti, like you said, like all these furry animals, and sometimes it's hard to drive the point that, well, they may be nice and furry, but the overall impacts on the ecosystem is very much detrimental. You mentioned at the beginning, I think, that there are some similarities between Finland and Ireland. And of course, I have to give a huge shout out to NRRGC. I actually meet you there, Velimatti. I meet you there on the conference about the hunters and conservation. Could you tell us what are those, you know, in the more detail, like what are those similarities and how you get to work together with NRRGC, and what are the synergies, like why it is important to have this sort of like a cross-border cooperation?
Well, we share the waterfall and we are related through them because we are the turning points of some species. So therefore, there's a connection. And otherwise, we could say that our landscape, there are similarities, and the boglands, the swamps, whatever name you use them, we share those in both countries. And we also share the land use of mining bogs. And actually, we also share the practice that it's now the mining is ending. And therefore, it opens new chances and possibilities for reusing the areas, and I think, and I'm quite sure that we could share information in that land use when we are rethinking how we use the old boglands that been mined. How we had this connection between the hunters in Finland and in Ireland, it is just actually quite simple. We've been connected through the Waterfallers Network organization, where there are 7 national hunting organizations united for the waterfall management and studies, and therefore I met your people
Patrick Breen, for example, he's the key member in this subject. And
shout out to Patrick Breen.
Greetings, Patrick. And therefore, we had, I remember sitting, having a waiting for an airplane in Denmark, and we had a great talk with Patrick about how to reuse the bobbleheads. And after that, we've been in connection, and therefore, when we held annual Waterfall Network meeting in Ireland, I was called to come along to that meeting, and after that meeting, we cooperated with you people over there having the seminar and meeting the with the local bobblehead company and so on. So I think we share a lot of things, and I spent great time with you people, and I noticed that we as people and nationality, we share something. We are also in different ends of flyway, but we have same kind of historical background in some way. We've been, you on the you are living over there by the Atlantic, and we are living by Russian border, and there's a comparison. You can see a comparison that our lifestyle can be similar. So therefore, I'm looking forward for the coming years and coming project, how we can manage the waterfall, the land use when we are reusing the boglands, and many other things. For example, we have in Finland, we are enthusiastic hunters of moose, for example, but you are keen on other things over there.
Woodcock,
yes. So there's over 100,000 of pairs of woodcocks nesting over here in Finland, and they are not practically not hunted at all. And over there in Ireland, for example, they are in really high value. And in that way, we could maybe do more cooperation and learn from each other and understand the connection that we are breeding the birds that move, many of them move to the islands over there, for example.
If something, mentioning something about the being at the extreme end of the flyway, yes, of course, we've been discussing how we are the production country and we send some birds to the British Isles and plenty of birds to the Western Europe, and some birds overwinter even as far south as Africa. But what comes to the, if we think about the sustainable hunting, actually we don't know what birds we are hunting in Finland, for instance. So it's talking about the ends of the flyway. It simplifies the picture a lot, since, for instance, the Wegian, there's the Project Penelope going on, satellite tracking the tracks of the or the flights of the Wegians, and that's another thing that we are only now learning more about. We also have a satellite tracking project with the Wegian in Finland, and it's just amazing the results that if we tag Wegians in the springtime in Finland, they're not necessarily migrating on to the northeast, but they go to every direction. So not to simplify things too much, but there is, even if we talk about the most common ones of our waterfowl that we've been traditionally thinking that these are birds that nest here and they spend the winter here. Actually, yes, we know that they occur here during the summertime and over here during the wintertime, but what are they, the same birds, and what happens in between? We are only learning about those things. So don't Veli Matti oversimplify the flyways of these birds that we have in common.
Heikki, you are perfectly right. Yes.
Excellent. Folks, is there anything that you would like to say that I didn't ask you about? Anything that I missed that is worth for listeners to hear?
Heikki brought it up that in Finland we don't have too much of basic studies, for example, of Project Penelope, that we have totally new information about the behavior of the birds. It's really amazing how they fly around, not to fly away, but fly around from Finland, and we had no idea. And also we have just recently found out that we are, what kind of penelopes we are hunting in Finland. Partly we hunting the domestic birds, but after they leave, we share a lot of birds from the east, for example. And this is kind of a new information, and in Finland we urge for more information on birds' behavior, and even just the use of the roots and sites. It's there's so much of information. Luckily, I'm positive that we are getting more and more good technique to it, and tagging birds helps us a lot, and the reading colors in legs or necks of geese, for example, gives us great information. But in Finland, we need more information from basic studies. And that brings up the question that we urge to have more flyway management. It needs to be more adaptive. It needs to be, of course, more international, and the collective needs to be built up and be active for the waterfall. Those are my thoughts for the things to bring up and push forward in the future.
About the adaptiveness, what comes to the Finnish waterfowling, there hasn't been any adaptiveness, none whatsoever. And we discussed this briefly already before, but now that we are really putting forward action what comes to the habitats and staging areas, there's also the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry, they also put up this kind of group work what comes to the sustainability of waterfowling. We haven't had any, for any of the species, we haven't had any hunting, what do you call it, hunting quotas. So you can shoot as many waterfowl as you wish. There's no limits whatsoever. So this is the first time that this issue has even been brought up. That has been, for instance, has been discussed in the working group, working with the sustainability issues. We don't have any limits yet, but I suppose it's coming in the near future, so that there will be some limits for the, maybe some limit for the mallard, some limit for the dabbling ducks, some limit for the diving ducks, who knows. But I'm most certain that some limits will come in the near future. Then hunting in the dark, it's been a matter of a huge even public discussion. So of course the hunting law says that you have to recognize the animal or bird that you are hunting, but there hasn't been any legislation about what comes to the how dark it is outside. So only last autumn was the first year that we had a new law that says that you have to end your waterfowling 1 hour after sunset, and you can only begin your waterfowling 1 hour before sunrise. So that's actually very strict, that at least some kind of legislation what comes to the hunting in the dark. So it because previously you could hear shooting all through the night at popular waterfowling sites, and it was no big secret. That's just how it was. Other issues that are addressed in the sustainability work are, for instance, the feeding of the waterfowl and the heavy hunting that comes along with the feeding sites, and that is another thing that is under heavy public discussion. There has been no limitation. You can feed waterfowl as much as you wish, and there's no bag limits. You can shoot as many birds as you wish, and that's another thing that there, at least we are hoping, and especially myself as a conservation guy, I really am looking forward to the time that we don't have the massive feeding of the waterfowl anymore, because it brings along huge issues what comes to the sustainability of the hunt, and all sorts of disease issues, and feeding the raccoon dogs on the side. So really it's not only about what happens with the habitats, but it's also all of this discussion with the sustainability and changes in the legislation hopefully coming in the near future.
And the feeding concerns our project. I mentioned earlier that the flocks come together quite early, and often the flocks come together at the feeding stations, the feeding areas, and therefore we could say that in 20-30 years, the affection has been shown up, that therefore the most of the people are leaving too early, because they tend to gather to the easiest way, into the easiest place to get food, get full. And it, when you eat grain, you get full fast, but you don't have the necessary nutrients, for example, and so on. And when you gather the birds, great amounts of birds at the same time, there's this disease problem, and of course, the hunting ethics and the quota is one thing. So we need wisdom for this finger.
This has been fantastic conversation, and you're doing great work. And I'm really happy that work is working in cooperation with NARGC as well. Surely, you know, that's sort of like not only cooperation between hunting and non-hunting groups, but also cross-border are what we need to do. And that's the direction we need to keep moving to save nature or to restore nature. Folks, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure working with you. Hope to see you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave me 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. This is great help for me and for the podcast. And while you're already there, don't forget to subscribe to my newsletter. The link is in the description of the show.